Order the House Committee on Consumer Protection for the Oregon State Legislature. It's Wednesday, February 21st, 2007. Today we're having a public hearing and possibly work sessions on House Bill 2109 and 2112. And at this time I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill 2109. And if, Steve, you could give us a brief preview while we ask the Construction Contractors Board to come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2109 divides the content of existing construction contractor statutes into smaller statutes, and there are -1 amendments before the committee which further clarify the bill and the restructuring of existing statute. And the -1 amendments also rewrite ORS 701-100 to ensure that contractors who lose their license with other agencies or are out of compliance with Oregon tax, unemployment, workers' compensation, independent contractor, or other laws may have their CCB license suspended or revoked.
Thank you. Craig Smith and Bill Boyd from the Construction Contractors Board. Excuse me. If you could introduce yourself and give us a review of this bill for the committee, I would really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. My name is Craig Smith. I'm joined today by Bill Boyd. We're with the Construction Contractors Board. We've prepared a brief document to talk a little bit about kind of a refresher of the original bill, 2109, with the -1 amendments. 2109, as the top cover sheet indicates, was first written to unscramble current language in the Construction Contractors Board Licensing Act, specifically at 701.055, and that statute had become a catch-all over the last 25 years, and it was disjointed, difficult to read. People couldn't find certain things they were looking for, and we thought it made sense to try to separate it. What was done was to separate it by logical section. You'll see that at the bottom of page 1, a section for building permits, a section that talks about what a prima facie case is of working as a contractor, and so forth. It was designed not to change public policy at all. We believe the bill achieved that design, with the exception of there was a portion in there talked about cities and counties, and later there was language added, as we understand the statute, that talked about cities and counties and other public subdivisions, and per council's suggestion, they corrected that to treat those things in a similar manner. Over the last 90 days or so, we discovered something else that made sense to correct, and we asked if it would be wise to amend this bill, and the board indicated that it would. We sought that amendment, and before you is that -1 amendment. The purpose of the -1 amendment is on the back of the cover sheet, or page 2, of the memorandum in front of you, and what it does is it changes a part of the statute known as 701.100, that gives the agency authority to discipline licensees when they violate other state regulations. And this was brought to our attention specifically as it relates to plumbing contracting law, wherein over the summer a plumber had been repeatedly disciplined and lost his license with the Building Codes Division. The Building Codes Division, as is their directive, asked to have the CCB license. We tried to reject it or revoked. We tried to do that, and we ran into a political, or not a political, but a legal problem with trying to exercise that revocation. This amendment would clarify that we have that authority. It would also clarify some other laws. Now, those are located on the third page of chart to show you precisely the clarifications that are made in the law so that we would be able to revoke a contractor's license, for example, if they didn't pay attention or were out of compliance with income tax or corporate excise tax law, manufactured home law, plumbing regulations, other building code regulations, elevator law, electrical code, workers' compensation, boiler law, unemployment insurance law, the new revised independent contractor law, landscaping law, And last, but certainly not least, as it was the impetus for this change, is the plumbing regulations. We believe that was the intent when those laws were created many, many years ago. Working with our AG and with the good services of Bill Boyd, we believe we've cleaned this up, and so we bring Dash 1 amendments to you, and we would cherish the opportunity to answer any questions.
I guess I'll start out with a question. I don't see any real hands. Just a real simple one, perhaps, for you. I noticed in our staff measure summary that we have in front of us that there may be a fiscal impact, but it has not been issued yet. And do you have any indication from the CCD's point of view whether there will be a fiscal impact along with this bill?
Thank you, Chair Holby, members of the committee. Minimal impact, if any. I don't see any additional workload here. There may be a few more civil penalties or revocations, but nothing that is going to impact the agency where it would need additional spending limitation or revenue.
Questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Bonamici.
I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2109.
That's a good
Sorry.
Point, but we'll take that up in just a minute.
I have to wait for the work session. Sorry.
Since we're in public hearing at the moment, we'll take that up in a few more minutes. So let me follow up just real briefly. So you don't anticipate any budget problems with the agency, so... you wouldn't venture to say if there'd be $50,000 or less fiscal impact on this.
Right. Chair Holby, there clearly will not be as much as $50,000. I can imagine there being a few thousand, nothing more than a $10,000 fiscal impact, and nothing that would require us seeking additional spending limitation or revenue.
Okay. That's kind of what I wanted to know. Again, any further questions from the committee on House Bill 2109? Thank you for your work on this. Looks like a pretty extensive look and rewrite, although somewhat technical in nature. It looks like it needed to be done. I'm glad you brought us the Dash 1 amendment to help the enforcement as well. So, with that, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 2109? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2109 and open a work session on House Bill 2109. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for getting ahead of myself there. I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2109.
Representative Bonamici moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments for House Bill 2109. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, they are so adopted. Or are there any objections, first of all? Then I'll adopt them. Seeing none, they're so adopted. And with that, I'll close the work session. Or no, I won't. I will take a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we move House Bill 2109 with the Dash 1 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Bonamici moves House Bill 2109 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be sure that I understand this. This is the first time we had a hearing on this bill, correct?
No.
We have seen this bill before.
Yes, we have.
All right, I was confused with another bill. That answers my question.
Any further discussion? Mike, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Levy?
Aye.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Ross?
Aye.
Representative Riley?
Aye.
Representative Bonamici?
Aye.
Representative Nelson? Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 2109, having received the necessary votes, is what? Excuse the interruption. House Bill 2109 receiving the necessary votes is declared passed. And are there any volunteers to carry this one on the floor? Representative Bonamici? Representative Bonamici will carry House Bill 2109 on the floor. Thank you. With that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2109 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2112. And Steve, if you could give us an overview, and we'll have the construction contractor board return to the stand as such.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2112 requires construction contractors who have lost their insurance coverage or alternative form of security to notify CCB that coverage has lapsed. There are dash one amendments in front of the committee now, which clarify the bill as written actually puts that burden on the insurer to notify CCB, and the dash one amendments shifts the burden from the insurer to the contractor when the insurance is lapsed.
Thank you. Craig, again, if you could introduce yourself for the record and give us a summary of House Bill 2112, that would be great. Thank you.
Chair Holby, thank you very much. Members of the committee, my name is Craig Smith. I'm with the Construction Contractors Board. Thank you again for hearing this bill. I'm joined today by Bill Boyd, and we bring for you House Bill 2112 with the dash one amendments. You may recall this is the bill that had to do with the insurance requirements.
Oh, yeah.
We've modified the handout a little bit to so we use it as a talking point document. On the front page of our handout, you'll see in italics the current CCB insurance requirements. They are such that most contractors have about $500,000 with a minimum coverage. Subcontractors in residential construction have a $300,000 requirement. The problem that we talked about, you may recall, is that the insurance runs for usually a year, that it expires, and we're able to tell contractors as it expires that they have, in fact, this requirement that they need to renew. And we give them several notices, and that works out pretty well, because we know when it expires. Sadly, once in a while, the contractor's insurance lapses for other reasons. And those reasons involve a claim that has occurred that has motivated the provider of the insurance to terminate the contract, or sometimes a lack of payment to the insurance provider. And when that occurs and the contractor loses their insurance coverage, in some cases we are not advised. Neither the insurance provider nor the contractor today is obligated to tell us that they have chosen, that the insurance is no longer in full force and effect. And that's a problem. It's a problem for us because we maintain records that show that that insurance is in effect. It's a problem for the public because those contractors can be out on the job and the insurance is not there. And because of the Internet, many folks are using our records to try to verify that a contractor has insurance coverage, and it works fine when we're provided with notice. Originally, we thought that a solution here would be to have the insurance company provide such notice to us, and for a variety of reasons, that turned out not to be a good idea. Insurance providers have provided some information to you, and the insurance division has counseled with us. The alternative is to put a requirement on the back of contractors. And to date, we've talked to contractor groups. This is not a pleasant thing for a contractor to have to do, to tell us that they don't have coverage. But we believe we've crafted an amendment that's acceptable to all. And the second page of this handout talks about that dash one amendment, wherein it indicates under item B on the second page, dash one amendment solution. This removes the obligation of the insurance provider to provide notice to the CCB. Secondly, it puts the requirement on the contractor to provide evidence if they lose insurance at any time during that period, that one-year period, they've got to provide us with evidence of new insurance. Makes it very clear. That sort of goes without saying. But this statute makes it very clear that if you provide insurance coverage or proof thereof that indicates you're going to have insurance for a year, that insurance lapses, you have an obligation as a contractor to provide proof of replacement insurance. Fairly simple. In the event that's impossible, or the contractor chooses not to do that, and they have an active license, what this bill would do is say within 10 days, you need to notify the CCB that you no longer have coverage. Now, it's my testimony to you that once we receive that, we'll verify it. We would like to set that up fairly easy so they could do that by a phone call, by a letter, by internet means. And we'll verify that with the contractor by letter. And we'll tell the contractor that they have a very short period of time to provide replacement coverage to us, or we'll be forced to take action, closing their license or suspending their license until they can demonstrate proof of insurance. That's this law in a nutshell, or the Dash 1 amendments. We've included in this handout an explanation of the amendment along with several screen prints of our current website to give you an idea of how that would operate through electronic means. And that would conclude our testimony. If you have any questions, I'd love to answer them.
Questions, Representative Galizio.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Smith, do you have the means to implement this?
Chair Holby and Representative Galizio, we believe we do have the means. We don't think this has any fiscal impact that we can't absorb. We probably will get several notices from contractors a day indicating that they don't have insurance. We'll have to verify that. It's going to be a burden a little bit on us as well as contractors. I do not believe there's a fiscal impact that exceeds $50,000. I do not believe the fiscal impact will cause us to need additional spending limitation, significant spending limitation, or revenue.
Further questions? Representative?
You can take Representative Nelson first.
Representative Nelson, you have a question?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much. Craig, I'm appreciate all you do, but right now I'm greatly concerned about the lack of meaningful enforcement powers that y'all seem to have, and I will talk about an insurance issue here, but can you tell me why? Because has the legislature not empowered you to have appropriate, proper enforcement powers?
Chair Holby and Representative Nelson, the legislature has given us a certain spending limitation, and we try to maximize that. We're a small agency. You know that we have a staff of about 60 people, three major programs. About a third of our resources, about 20 of those staff, deal with contract disputes. About 20 of the other staff deal with licensing in general. About 10 of the remaining 20 deals with the administrative workings of the office, including me and the other logistics of operating the office. We have about 10 or 12 people working in the enforcement of the licensing law. And we have a lot of need there. And I'm working with other interested bodies to try to determine what this state wants to have in the way of enforcement of both the licensing law and all the things that go along with that licensing law, including workers' compensation and employment requirements and all the other things that contractors have to comply with in order to abide by Oregon law. To answer your question directly, you know, from a bureaucrat standpoint, we can always use more resources, but we're trying to do the best we can with what we have.
Follow up, please, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Well, let me just tell you about this concern of mine, is that I have in front of me a story that happened to have occurred in my district that I'm greatly concerned about, where a builder, you know, had very shoddy workmanship for a long time, ultimately ended up building a home that was just immersed in mold. Found out he didn't have insurance that covered mold.
Yeah.
So my concern is, what insurance? What is our purpose of requiring insurance if it doesn't cover the protection of a consumer?
Sure. Chair Holby, Representative Nelson, that's a good question. The insurance predominantly is set to handle accidents that occur on the job. In years past, it didn't cover such things as mold. I'm talking about the 70s and some of the 80s. I'm not an insurance expert, but this is one of the reasons why the Assembly last session set up the task force on construction claims. That task force, is, as you may be aware, is bringing you several bills on Friday and Monday dealing with construction defects, perhaps the worst of which include water intrusion that can result in mold. The other driver of mold is constructing a building that's been rained on and sealed up. So let alone the intrusion problem, sealing up a structure before it's dried out. The task force on construction claims also dealt with that issue through a building code suggestion of requiring a certain moisture content before a home can be sealed up, if you will. Your question, however, deals with the insurance requirement. And what, if anything, does the insurance cover if not mold and if not water intrusion? I can't tell you precisely. I can tell you that in most cases, the insurance does not cover water leakage or mold.
I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair. And in this case, it didn't cover the breach of contract or shoddy workmanship. So, I mean, we need to either be more explicit about what insurance we're supposed to cover to protect the consumer, or this is all, you know, just kind of phony baloney.
Right. Chair Holvey and Representative Nelson, I think it's I agree with you. I think that the question as to what the insurance covers and what it doesn't cover is one that goes to the heart of the issue of how much consumer protection does this requirement provide. And the other side of that equation, of course, is that the cost of that insurance has been going up at astronomical levels for contractors, and that was one of the issues that the task force attempted to answer, is what, if any, benefit does this insurance requirement provide to both the contractors and to the public that they serve?
Just the last question, please.
One more, please.
Thank you, Chair Hobie. Craig, I guess I'm feeling really lonely up here because I can't seem to get an answer. I think our greatest responsibility is to the consumer. And maybe it's going to be in these bills on Friday. But my concern is that this very contractor, even though there are numerous complaints, many examples of shoddy workmanship, lack of proper insurance, he's still in business. And so I'm just wondering, what is the process? If the CCB allows him to stay in business, what can a normal plain old person like me do to get this guy out of our world?
Sure. Representative Nelson, I have a hint of who you may be talking about, but in this forum, I guess I'd prefer to talk to you at the conclusion of the meetings to talk about specifics. But let me say in general that the Construction Contractors Board suspends hundreds of contractors per month for lack of insurance coverage. That's one of the purposes of this bill, is frankly, if they don't have insurance, they're going to have to tell us about it. We're going to find out more and more situations of contractors who don't have insurance. It's tightening up that noose, if you will, not loosening it at all. If there is a contractor who has been responsible for defects such as damage, negligent work, whether or not it's covered by insurance, our statutes allow us to take that contractor's license away, and we do so dozens of times a month for licensees who haven't paid their debt. I have to tell you that we run into problems with bankruptcy, and we have recently lost a case in which we did have to allow a person who had lost several thousand dollars in damages but then filed for protections under the bankruptcy code. Oregon attempted through the CCB to keep him from becoming licensed. We were sued, and the United States Bankruptcy Court found that we were out of compliance with bankruptcy law. So you have to understand that we do struggle with the bankruptcy issue. But absent that issue, it's our intent that any time we find a contractor who has unpaid construction debt, and that's whether they've lost in court or with the CCB, we take that person's license away
with their license or any license that they're associated with as an owner or operator until that debt's paid.
Thank you.
Thank you, and I might add, Representative Nelson, that this is one bill that doesn't deal with the whole issue that you're speaking of. We have several bills coming to this committee from the task force that we have not had a chance to really discuss yet. We're waiting for amendments and such, but we will be looking at a wide range of bills that deal with different pieces of this overall problem. So with that question, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome back, Mr. Smith and Mr. Boyd. I hope you can help me understand this, and I think it may be because I'm not looking at an engrossed bill, and I'm trying to figure it out, but if I were a contractor, I think I'd be really confused. And I'll try to explain this, because under both Section 1 and Section 2 on page 2, if you look at the original bill, 2112, at the top it says if the insurance policy or alternative form of security ceases to be, page 2, right at the top, if an insurance policy or alternative form of security ceases to be in effect during the term of a license, no later than the date the policy or form of security ceases to be in effect, the contractor shall provide evidence satisfactory to the board that an insurance policy or alternative form of security meeting the requirements of this section has been procured in replacement of the cancellation. So, You shall provide evidence that it's been replaced. But then the amendment language says if the contractor does not obtain a replacement policy or alternative form of security on or before the date of cancellation, the contractor must notify the board no later than 10 days after the date of cancellation. So I'm a little confused about, you're saying they shall provide evidence that they've replaced it, but then the amendment language says if you don't get a replacement, here's what you need to do. So I'm confused.
Sure. Representative Paulby and Representative Bonamici, I understand that. Mm-hmm. One thing I can do is direct you to the back page. Back two pages, what we've tried to do is provide an engrossed version of the bill with amendments. And there's a chart there that tells what each thing does. I apologize for the stapling, but if you can get to the second page, it looks like this. And perhaps that, with my explanation, will help explain how this works. In the red, the first red item, it talks about, that's the dash one language, wherein it requires the contractor to notify the board within 10 days if they haven't provided replacement insurance. So in essence, it gives them 10 days. It does say that before they, if they lose their insurance, they've got to replace it. That's the first part of the bill. You can't just not have insurance. You have to replace it. The second part of the, or the dash one amendments say if you don't, you got to tell the board. You have 10 days to tell the board.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, but it still seems inconsistent to me. And it could just be the way I'm reading it, but I look forward to hearing. I hope other people will try to explain this, because it seems inconsistent to say you have to provide evidence that you've replaced it, and then in the next sentence say, well, if you haven't replaced it, you have another 10 days. Those just seem inconsistent to me. So, for the record.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Bonamici, I appreciate that. It was a solution that was suggested to us. We could have required the contractors to tell us immediately in the event that they didn't have coverage. In working with various groups, it was suggested to us that sometimes contractors work diligently right up until the very last day. And it would make more sense to give a day or two, or in this case we chose 10, before we would pull the trigger, if you will, and say, look, now you're out of compliance. You haven't told us. You had 10 days after you lost it. Now you've got to tell us. So that was the thinking that went behind this amendment.
Thank you. Representative Girard.
Thank you, Chair Hovey. I'm going to follow back on the enforcement mechanism of this. What reason does a contractor that loses his insurance and cannot get it renewed, what reasons would he have to notify the board knowing that he would lose his license?
Chair Holvey and Representative Girard, you're right. There isn't a great incentive for them to follow the law. It's probably the same incentive that a contractor has in general to become licensed, and that is that if you're out of compliance with the law, you're subject to some penalties. Today, there's no penalty for losing your insurance and not telling anybody. And we'd like to have at least a requirement in law that says, look, if you lose it, you gotta say something, and you gotta replace it, number one. And if you don't replace it, then you're going to have to at least raise your hand and tell the state that you no longer have that coverage. Because what we'll do is we'll work with the contractor for a short period of time, but we will change the website and indicate that that contractor doesn't have the insurance coverage.
Further questions? Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Chair Holvey. Greg, Mr. Smith, Mr. Boyd, why don't we just have a cease? You must cease and desist the date your insurance expires. I can't see any different than driving an automobile and not having, you know, insurance coverage. And I would bet I'd lose my license if somebody stopped me and I didn't have it.
Representative Holvey, that makes sense as well. One shouldn't work without insurance. There's no question about that. We would hope that contractors wouldn't be working without insurance. We don't know if they're working or not. What we do know is their license shows that they're properly licensed. Until we get that kind of notice, and we want to be able to take action to turn their license off if, in fact, they don't have the insurance. So I agree with you. Perhaps it would be better if the bill said if you don't have insurance coverage, you must stop immediately and acquire insurance.
Further questions from the committee? Mr. Boyd, I do have a question in line with this question. What happens in a scenario where the contractor may not know that his insurance has been canceled?
Well, if I could,
can that happen? I mean, what if his insurance company doesn't notify him and they cancel him? Just, you know, for general purposes, the insurance company decides to cancel somebody.
Chair Holvey, with the perennial disclaimer that I'm not an insurance expert, it's my understanding that the contract between the insurance provider and the contractor requires notice. And So it has to be written notice to the contractor. I believe it's 30 days. So the contractor knows.
So that... I'll follow up with that. So that, you're fairly assured, happens religiously and never fails that somebody isn't noticed.
Chair Holvey, I've never experienced a situation where a contractor lost their insurance and didn't have notice to their address of record. Now, I got to tell you, it's possible, and this happens from time to time, where contractors sometimes move, don't notify folks of their address, and so it's possible that a contractor moved and didn't get notice.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify my earlier comments. I recall that on our first public hearing on this bill that Mr. Powell explained that the insurance company did have to give notice on an advance notice on non-renewal, and I believe he said it was 45 days, and that also there were the midterm cancellation reasons were spelled out in the statute, and there was a 10-day period to correct. And that's where I'm assuming the 10 days came from in the Dash 1 amendments. And my objection isn't to the content of the Dash 1 amendments, it's to what I perceive as an inconsistency in the way it's drafted with the statute or with the bill.
Further questions from the committee? Well, in light of that, I'm not sure I share Representative Bonamici's concern with the inconsistency, but I think that I'm not going to move this bill forward at this time, and maybe would like to see if there's anybody else that would like to testify on this 10-day issue, and if not, perhaps we can work with you after this hearing and see if we can... clarify this 10-day issue with Representative Bonamici and perhaps somebody from the insurance industry. there anybody else that would... I appreciate your testimony. I don't see any more questions for you, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Anybody else would like to testify to House Bill 2112? Okay. Looks like we have Mr. Berry coming forward.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. Scott Berry with the Oregon Home Builders Association. And just briefly, I will comment that I missed the a scheduled work group on this. I was unfortunately out of town that week and wasn't able to make it. I think part of our concern, and Representative Bonamici brought up one of the issues, some confusion I think is still exists here in terms of the way we are reading the bill. But in addition to that, I know that the Contractors Board receives proof of insurance when that contractor comes in to initially get their license, which means they also have the expiration date. You have to have the insurance before you come in. It seems to me they also would be aware then of when that term expires. Now, there may be instances when the insurance company is cutting the insurance off or canceling that contractor during the insurance policy. I don't know the answer to that necessarily. But if the insurance company could potentially just copy the contractor's board along with the contractor, potentially that, again, would help out. And in that sense, we see the CCB then having knowledge of the impending insurance expiration because they have the initial policy as well, and then some sort of penalty if the contractor does any work after that. So that if you're working after your insurance expires, the insurance company would have sent that notice to the CCB. CCB would be aware of it again because they already hold the policy, and then we don't turn it over to the contractor to potentially miss a time and continue working. Everyone's aware of the date, the pending or impending date, and the CCB could then potentially send that notice out to the contractor saying, we're showing your expiration of an insurance policy coming up in 30 days, and could you please demonstrate to us where we are wrong, if we are. Otherwise, we're assuming you're not going to be doing any work after this date. Chair Holby, you said you were not moving the bill. Maybe sitting down and having a quick discussion about that solution might be a better answer than requiring the contractor to turn around and send information back to the CCB about proof of insurance when, theoretically, the CCB should have that proof and the expiration date already in their hands.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Berry. I'm a bit concerned because I realize that this has happened and is happening, is that we have contractors who have problems under one name, and because of shoddy workmanship or lack of insurance or lack of decency, are out of business in that name. But we have nothing stopping them from immediately working under another business name, do we?
Chair Holby, Representative Nelson, I believe there have been some changes at the Contractors Board to attempt to address that issue. Its tie into the insurance issue, obviously that new entity would have to go out and get insurance and turn that in under that new entity name to have a new Contractors Board license. But that may be a better question for Mr. Boyd or Mr. Smith. Certainly that is a problem, though, and we've spent the last few sessions trying to work with the Contractors Board in addressing folks who are have problems under one business entity name and then try to simply avoid those problems by switching to a new name.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee of Mr. Berry? Appreciate your comments, and maybe you can join us for a short discussion at some point.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there anybody else that in the audience that would like to testify in House Bill 2112? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2112. And
Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson,
yes.
Comment?
Yes, sir. I would humbly request the opportunity to vote on the first bill of the day that I missed.
Oh, absolutely.
Due to my cholesterol check out in the hall.
Could I have a motion to suspend the rules to allow Representative Nelson to...
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Nelson to vote on the House Bill 2109.
And
We need to open a...
Open a work session on...
You need to take a vote on that motion, I think.
Oh, yes, we'll take a good point. I have a motion on the floor to suspend the rules. Is there any objections? Seeing none, rules are suspended, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 2109 for the purpose of allowing Representative Nelson to vote. So, Representative Nelson, not sure how to proceed with this, but we adopted amendments, and do you have any objections to adopting the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2109?
I would very much like to adopt the Dash 1 amendments. And
you have no objections to them being adopted?
I have no objections.
They've already been adopted. So, Representative Nelson, how do you vote on House Bill 2109 as amended?
Thank you for this. I vote aye.
Thank you. Let the record show that Representative Nelson votes aye on House Bill 2109 as amended to be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2109. Anything further from the committee? Hearing none, I will close the House Committee on Consumer Protection. Thank you.